This is Phil Ferrin, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's a little warm today. It's not too bad, not too bad. There are clouds in the skies. The sun is out. We're hoping for less clouds, more sun over the next few days because the eclipse is coming. I've got a t-shirt. I ordered a t-shirt. I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but it has a picture of eclipse on it, and it says, totality is coming. So, boom. Anyway, so, t-shirt's in, gonna wear it tomorrow. I was thinking for the socks, maybe I should just wear black socks, because it's totality. I happen to have one pair of black socks I could wear. Those are my funeral socks. So... That's the only pair of black socks that I have. The rest of them are funner than black. But I also have some kind of gray and black and white paisley socks. I think I'm just going to wear those. Just because. You know, why wear black socks when there's other things that you could wear? Anyways, all is well. Really excited about totality. We have been monitoring the weather. Watching, trying to decide where to go. It looks like at this point, according to the predictions, it's going to be partly cloudy basically across all of Missouri. So it's going to be one of those things that you are just going to have to like pick a spot and then just go and then see. I've been thinking all week that there is actually another option besides just looking at the weather forecast. And that is, if memory serves correctly, during our second term in the Philippines, we had gone home one day from Faith Academy and been given an assignment to make certain observations in the night sky. And as I recall, I went home and went outside when it turned dark, which in the Philippines, since it's on the equator, it turns dark pretty much the same time all year round. It was like 6 o'clock, dark. But you also got twilight, which was so cool. I loved twilight. Because just as the sun dips below the horizon, you get the flash of light that is bouncing off the atmosphere, and everything turns this really surreal shade, and you're just looking around, and all the colors are different. It's not the golden hour, like you get those gorgeous, gorgeous colors. It's just like you're not quite in reality because it's twilight. That was always fun in the Philippines. But then it goes dark. It goes dark fast after twilight. Because it's really close to the equator. So anyways, it had gotten dark, as I recall, and I went outside and it was overcast. You couldn't see one of the stars. And so having been raised as my mother had raised me, I looked up and I said, "Well, dear Jesus, I need to be able to see some stars." And I walked back inside, turned around for a few minutes, came out, clear skies. Or at least enough of a break in the skies that I could do my homework. So I did my homework, wandered back inside. I'm not really sure what happened after that. But the next day, I got there. And as I recall, I was one of the only people, if not the only person, who actually got their homework done. People were like, "The sky was overcast. It was cloudy." They were looking at me, and I was like, I prayed, and then I went out, and there was enough clearance that I would... I don't know if they actually believed me or not. So, you know, there's always an option there. There's always an option. We could ask Jesus to help us. Anyway, so we'll see. This is going to be really fascinating. To see, we still haven't decided where we're going. We're going to have a confab powwow on Saturday, sometime hopefully Saturday, try to figure out where we're going, figure out how to get up there without hitting all kinds of traffic, and, you know, we'll go from there. So, anyways, it's gonna be a madhouse. It's just, oh, this company that I bought the eclipse glasses from, which is a whole other saga, I think I mentioned that last week, all the eclipse glasses came in. So, for a while there, we had 70 pairs of eclipse glasses. We don't quite have that many now, because I have given a bunch of them away. But we still have plenty of eclipse glasses for us. So we have those. I have tried them out. They're very cool. You can look at the blinding sunlight, and it's just a little yellow-orange ball. So it's very cool. It's lots and lots and lots of fun. But anyways, ordered the eclipse glasses, gave a bunch away. I have just completely lost where I was. I don't know what I was talking about. We've been ramping up, though, and we're pretty excited. We'll decide where to go. We're going to go. That's Monday. Yay! It'll be exciting. The book, I'm still a week and a half out from theoretically finishing the book. I theoretically need to be finished with the book because the book is supposed to come in around 140. Ideally, 135,000 words. I'm at 139,000 words, and I still have more to go. The last book was 154,000 words, so I've got a little breathing room, but I don't have a ton of breathing room. And I should get this book finished up. And I really need the book to be no more than about an inch on the spine, because I've already placed the new animal on this cover, whose horn goes back into the old cover on book 6 on the spine. So I've got, you know, I can't go too much wider, but I'm sure it will be fine. I am encouraged because I kind of have a map. I was planning on doing something else for the epilogue, and now for sure I'm not going to do that. I'm going to save that for the next book. And because it fits really better with that whole thing over there, and it will give me a lot to work with over there. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. But I got to just get this book wrapped up right now. What felt like the main adventure in this book ends up not being the main adventure. And what felt like just a kind of a side plot actually ends up being the full plot. But it all fits. I was able to say what I wanted to say. So that's fine. So I'm still working out some of those details. It's going to be great. I'm sure it's going to land. But I can see my way now clear, I think. I think I've got the pieces to get to the end. I just have to get there. I need to get there in less than 20,000 words, which is going to be a little bit of a challenge, but then when I go back and read through it again, I'll be able to tweak it down. And like I said, I've been able to say the things that I want to say. The epilogue should be good. I don't exactly know what I'm doing in the epilogue yet or the conversation, but I know what I want to accomplish. And, you know, I'm using one of those ringer ideas that you just know is going to deliver. It just will deliver. There's no question it'll deliver. Because it's one of those huge archetypes. Validation, transcendence. I mean, it's a huge archetype. It'll deliver. Just a matter of writing it. And just even me thinking about, even right now as I think about the epilogue and I think about some of the lines in the epilogue, you know, I start to get a little choked up. Because, yeah, it'll land. So anyways, this week and next, that'll be exciting. That'll be exciting. Aside from that, work has been puttering along. Work is good. Got an extra little side project at work this week, but it's not going to be anything too bad. Just have to work out some details. Things are puttering along, yada, yada, yada. I've already told everybody I'm going to be gone on Monday, so, you know, we'll get it all taken care of. It'll be great. Anyways, today I was looking around. I actually had watched a TED Talk. And I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I thought it wasn't a TED Talk. It was just a video on YouTube. I thought this particular YouTube video brought out some interesting things that I hadn't heard before. And I think the piece that the guy is missing is when he's talking about this all the time, it's like, yeah, this is all true for men, but he never says just for men, you know, it's like, yeah, everything you're saying is true for men on average in general. I'm sure some women have this same problem, but it's not nearly as pronounced as it is with men. And that's simple because the talk was about the effect of porn on the brain. And the fact of the matter is the vast majority of the people who watch porn are men. And the vast majority of porn addicts are men. So, anyways. But there was some interesting stuff, interesting ways of talking about all of this. Because he was specifically talking about high-speed internet porn and how different that was. You know, there's always been girly magazines. There's always been the little postcards. I forget what they used to call those. Little postcards with pictures of naked women on them or women provocatively posed. There's always been that stuff. Always, always. And it's a fairly consistent prediction that if a given technology can be used successfully in porn, it will be successful itself. And you can trace that back through the invention of technologies. But the guy made some interesting points, and these are common knowledge things, but I hadn't heard some of these before. It's interesting. He said, basically, we are made up of two types of cells. We're made up of germ cells that spread genetic material, and we're made up of somatic cells. Obviously, the germ cells' job is to hold and spread genetic material. The somatic cells are essential to protect the germ cells and make sure they're able to do their job. So in this philosophy, we're basically just containers for DNA, and our whole job is to go around and spread our DNA. Now, obviously, I don't feel that way, but when you look at just the base mechanisms that keep the species going, yeah, sure, that's why you're a collection of somatic cells, including your brain and your arms and your legs, and you are a collection of germ cells, that's your genetic material, and there are very basic, primitive, primal functions, rituals that are built right into the system to keep that system going so that it can deliver the germ cells. All right, so blah, blah. So at its very basic, nature's expectation, the guy said, is for you to pass on what will be the next soma carrying the precious genetic materials and just keep doing that. Thankfully, we as men, as human beings, do not stop our ability to produce germ cells and our delivery mechanisms normally, and we have pills if we do. Unlike some species. This was one of the places I started laughing. Apparently, there is a small mouse-like creature called Antechinus. A-N-T-E-C-H-I-N-U-S. Antechinus. The males have a very short lifespan because at a certain point, they will have finished making all the sperm they can and lose the ability to make any more. Here's what's interesting. When they reach that point, they will aggressively mate with as many females as they can. They will tirelessly have sex for hours on end to the point that their fur falls off, they bleed internally, their immune system fails, and leaves them riddled with gangrene. Oi, this is bad. And then they will continue to have sex until they die. Thank God we're not one of these creatures. Anyways, So there are very powerful subsystems involved in all of this. One of the powerful subsystems involved in this is dopamine. And in fact, the dopamine system for men is tightly wired into this whole process of the rituals of reproduction, the male rituals of reproduction. And that gives rise to things like internet porn addiction. I'm not saying it can't happen to women. It can, because the dopamine system can turn to addiction in many, many forms. But in men, one moment, I'm getting my mail. In men, the fact of the matter is that there is a greater danger. There is a greater danger of this. And in fact, they've done studies where they watch dopamine output in the brain, and they've shown in these studies that for men specifically, the process of sexual arousal and ejaculation and all that sort of thing produces more dopamine in the brain than like eating food. So, of course, that reward system becomes important to men. Anyways, what's interesting, and what is interesting that is built into the system, is that aside from everything else, it appears that an animal, and mammals do this, you know, an animal, I'm backing into my garage, will reach a certain satiation point after they mate with a specific other animal so many times. So there is actually, I'm going to roll down my window because it's a little warm. There is actually documentation that shows that when you have an animal and they're mating with the same partner over and over, that animal will reach a certain sexual satiation point. And the dopamine level starts falling off. And the recovery time to where that animal, male, is ready to mate again, grows longer. What's interesting is if you introduce a totally new partner, the dopamine spikes again. So, you know, the fact of the matter is these subsystems were built when human existence and human continuous existence, continuity, was a whole lot harder than it is now. But they carry over. So they have a very specific purpose, and there was a reason they were built this way, and God's a fabulous designer, because this was part of what ensured the survival of the species, no matter what the disasters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, here's the problem, though. With high-speed internet, apparently, I have not, but apparently, in 30 minutes, you can see more members of the opposite sex erotically displaying themselves than the total number of humans our ancestors could see in their lifetime. So we right now have this disconnect between what our society can present to us and our technology can present to us versus what our basic subsystems were designed to do. And these processes are self-regulating so that if you're producing a lot of dopamine, you actually get into a kind of dopamine resistance. And this is pretty commonly known. You know, normally dopamine is released when you get an unexpected reward, and then when the expectations of the rewards are there and dopamine is released over and over, you get less reward out of the dopamine response. And specifically when you're doing the same thing over and over. Novelty in the brain is something that produces dopamine. So you can track all kinds of things that happen when you end up overdriving this system. I mean, he had a whole host of things. Let me see if I can find that list because I am home. You know, when you start getting triggered and you start, you know, doing this heavy, intensive reward circuitry constantly on yourself, you start getting changes in how the dopamine reacts. So, I mean, you get all sorts of things. It says, as of 2015, there were only four studies that looked specifically at internet pornography, but they all showed the same negative brain changes. Then they found 60% of porn users, sorry, this is going to get earthy, had erectile dysfunction or low libido. Because the out in the real world, you know, there wasn't that huge instantaneous stimulation to get them going. And so because they had overtaxed their dopamine systems by looking at every woman they could possibly look at, nothing in the real world is going to satisfy them. They found, you know, that porn worsened social anxiety, caused a lack of confidence, caused the inability to concentrate and extreme restlessness, depression, anxiety, brain fog, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they also, you know, mixed in a whole bunch of other things in this, like saying that, you know, this dopamine response isn't limited just to porn. The fact of the matter is we now have in our technologies things that we never had available to us. I mean, they went through stuff like, in the past, the best suite that could be found was probably something like an apple or honey. That was like a big day. But those fruit at that time were only about as sweet as a modern-day carrot, according to this author. Now, he said, you can buy a pound of granulated essence of sweet for about a dollar. He said, farmers in the Andes used to chew coca leaves for a mild boost in energy. And now you extract that, you refine it, and you get the highly addictive cocaine because we're overdriving all of our systems. And columnist Damian Thompson sums up the situation with alcohol. Quote, as a general rule, the distilling of pleasures is a quick route to addiction. In the mid-18th century, parts of inner London suffered the world's first mass epidemic of alcoholism. The gin craze was eventually stamped out by legislation banning home distilling. Once cheap gin ceased to be available, addicted drinkers kicked the habit. So you're working with the same kind of dopamine response system where it's not really designed for your benefit if you overdrive it. And of course, the flesh knows that. And so the flesh will try to get you to overdrive your dopamine system as much as it can. It'll try to get you to ignore the fact that this isn't good for your systems, that you could just take one more hit, that you could just see it one more time. But one of the really more practical things out of all of this, and he talked about this as well in this talk, is the fact that our cell phones, our applications on our cell phones, are all designed to give you a dopamine hit. It's something like Facebook. What makes Facebook so attractive? Well, what makes Facebook so attractive is because you can refresh your news feed and see something new. It's novelty. And you can just sit there and keep refreshing it and keep refreshing it and keep refreshing it. You know, you can text a friend and a friend, and then you got 18 friends. All of a sudden, you're holding text conversations between all of them. It's all novel. Every time it dings, every time you get a like, it's a little bounce of dopamine there. And if you don't get it, then you're depressed. I think one of the saddest things about our society at this point, I ran sound at church on Sunday. We're in the middle of the worship service, beautiful worship service. We're worshiping God and stuff, and you look down over the congregation, and there's at least 10% of the congregation that are standing to worship, but they're staring at their cell phones and looking and punching buttons. You know, these games like Candy Crush where things are falling down and broken, and there's bing, there's a surprise, and yay, good job. You know, little rewards. It's dopamine hits. It's all dopamine hits. Because they keep throwing new things into the mix. Novelty. You know, and you feel like you're accomplishing something. And as I was thinking about all this, I thought, you know, that's interesting. But I was thinking that, you know, what would be great beyond all this is if we could figure out a way, and I think I have, to actually use creativity as a dopamine hit as well. And one of the things that's going to be interesting to me to see, right now, I have accelerated myself. I have made a decision. I'm going to plow out words. Well, what that means is there's a whole bunch of novelty through the week because I have to keep coming up with stuff that's new. And when I do come up with something that's new, I get this little hit. It's like, hey, there it is. Hey! And I'm driving myself forward with that. And certainly once I land a book and I go back and read through it and it's not bad, it's okay. I mean, I get this rush of, yay, I landed another one. And then when I finally figure out what's on the cover and I get the cover done, there's this little rush. Yay, I got another cover done. And certainly it helps when it comes back from the beta readers. And my beta readers, they're very kind in some of their comments. I don't know whether I deserve it or not, but they are very kind in their comments. Some aren't, but many are. Many are. And when I get the ones that aren't, I'm like, oh, okay, well, it probably wasn't for them. But then when I get the ones that are just like, this is so good, you know, there's a little ping, dopamine. So I do think that you can craft a dopamine response, hopefully that's healthy, out of that. I can't say for sure whether it is or not. But it's an interesting proposition that getting involved in something creative, getting involved in an epic, a quest, an adventure, and we define that by, as we have said before, your epic, your quest, your adventure is something that only you can do. It's something that no one can stop you from doing, unless they kill you. And it's something that if you do not do, there will be a gap in the world. It is something creative. And it's interesting that on the basis of the fact that dopamine is released in greater proportions when there's novelty, when there's something new, which is really the definition of the creative process. You are creating something new. That if you are getting a dopamine hit off of those things, if I was to guess, I would say you probably could drive yourself into addiction where the only thing that would be important would be doing that painting or doing that sculpture or doing the writing or, you know, whatever. But I would think it would be a little harder to do because in the midst of all of that creating, there is also hard work. And there can be some anxiety. And so I think there's kind of a self-regulatory thing there, as well as this wonderful experience when you're creating something. Something that did not exist in the world, and now it does. Boom! Get a hit from that. And that's cool. I think that's really cool that we can actually train ourselves and use our bodies. I like the idea. I don't know if it's true, but I like the idea that we can train ourselves, that we can use our bodies, that we can be creative. And in being creative, we can produce enough novelty that we can actually have enough pleasurable sensations and enjoyment out of that, that that can help continue to push us forward in creative endeavors. Because sometimes creative endeavors are just a lot of hard work. And I think part of the reason that, you know, it's so fun for me to write these books is that I must be getting some kind of a dopamine hit off it. Now, I will tell you right now, yesterday I was doing some yoga downstairs and I looked over at my map because I'm on book 7. Book 8 is coming. I already know what's going on there. And then we start a whole new octet. And if the flesh didn't, as I was looking at that whole new octet going, Oh, now you got to do it again. You're going to have to start over at the beginning. Are you not going to be able to come up with that many stories? It's like, shut up. We got through this first date. We'll get through the next 16. Booyah. Anyways, but it's fun. So I thought there was some interesting stuff about dopamine in there. I thought there was some interesting stuff about how the brain reacts to novelty and how that in our current society, we just really need to be aware. We need to be aware that our subsystems are not necessarily designed for what we're getting right now. And we need to be aware of the ways that our brains can be compromised and co-opted because of the way the dopamine system works. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.